Insurgent Radio calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy. Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the heartland and in the bunker today. And you're not going to believe this. It's about 18 below zero here in the heartland. Yeah. And I was looking out the window and I saw several cars full of Mexicans headed south. Yeah, they're going to get their brown asses out of here. Yeah. Well, it's Friday, Freya's Day, January the 16th. And all you guys, either tonight or tomorrow night or Sunday, get that little lady out of the kitchen. Get her out there. Take her out someplace. Have a little fun. Buy her something to eat. There you go. Yeah, that's a thing to do. Well, we're our address is P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Now, you make your orders to the merchandise at resist.com. I said resistance.com yesterday. My bad. It's merchandise at resist.com. You send your order there. Now, if you're on the radio club, you don't have to send anything to that address. You send it directly to me. But then you say if you're ordering things or books or anything like that, you'll send that order along with your money, a copy of the order you sent to merchandise at resist.com. Send that to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And then I simply give the high sign to the big, vast Walmart-sized storage building on the West Coast, where we've got another weapons of mass destruction used equipment lot out there too. And the big stuff we have to just move it over there, pull it over there out there west of the Mississippi. But and anybody wants weapons of mass destruction back here, the tanks and all that stuff, artillery, well, you have to purchase it here, and then we'll make arrangements to pull it through your town. And I'm sure that all the white people there will be thrilled to see it coming through. How about that? Now, yesterday, for you club members, screwed up a little bit. I sent you two shows. One was all music and one was commentary. Well, about that time of the day, I was getting a little dreary, a little tired. Sometimes that happens. Not very often. They don't call me, they used to call me Super Nish, you know, technician. Technician most of my life, and I had a nickname out West Coast, Super Nish. But even Super Nish unwinds once in a while. Well, anyhow, I sent the music program twice, so you guys are real good at that. You let me know real quick, so I ran down to the bunker and sent it out again. So my bad, but it's not bad enough to take me to the woodshed. Well, we were due to videotape, or not videotape, but DVD, another Race and Reason show this week, but the weather was so bad, and it was difficult to get the guests come around. You know, this may be a little problem for us, because we've called, two or three people that I thought would be really excited about getting their ideas out on TV. Because these are not only shown in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where they're produced, but they're sent all over the country, and they'll be put on other cable access stations. And so I was a little surprised. So anyhow, we'll give guests a little more heads up. But if you know somebody out there that's got something to say and can say it reasonably intelligently, well, have them write us right away, or get in touch with us, or email us, and we'll figure a time when we can do a show. And I think you'll be real happy with it. Yeah, sort of funny, you know, these guys that if you go to a rally or anything, or a meeting with these racial right wingers, they'll talk your leg off. But when you say hey, come on the TV show and do that, tell us the same stuff, or hopefully a little more racist than right wing, they're long gone. Man, if you can't handle that, how are you going to handle a rifle out there, not in a foxhole, but it might be a foxhole, sometime in the future? If you can't handle going on television and answering a few questions, I don't know what you're going to do when the heat really gets hot. Well, you may have noticed I've run quite a few lectures by Guerrilla Radio Man, and the reason for that is he never knows for sure how long he's going to be able to stay in one spot due to his personal life. So he crammed a few in here, and I'm going to run another one today, and it may be the last you hear for a while. I don't know. It depends on his situation. So if you don't hear Guerrilla Radio Man on for a week or maybe a few weeks, I don't know. Because, see, I respect the privacy of the lone wolves. I don't ask too many questions. So anyhow, we're going to put that on right now.
Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Radio calling. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling. And I'm your host, the original Dogface Pariah. I'll tell you someday how I got that name. But in the spirit of today's show, let's just say my name is Tyler Durden for you radical people who've seen the movie Fight Club. I don't want to really loud and magnify the movie Fight Club because there were some things about it that I didn't like. I mean, for one, it was written and directed by a Jew, David Fincher. I don't remember what his last name is, but there are some things I liked about it, and there are some things I didn't like. So, okay, I want to make a correction real quick here. About the thing about missing that, I really don't like that word. Maybe I'll talk to Tom Metzger off the air about that, because that denotes some kind of authority or leadership on my part. I am merely, doing these shows, I am merely allowing you, the radio listening audience, and you ghost wolves out there, to just look at the world through my eyes. I'm not saying I'm anything more than what I state myself to be, but, you know, I'll just clear that up maybe at another time. Okay, I want to clarify something real quick about this bug-out bag I was talking about yesterday, your escape and evade bag. I don't know if I stressed it yesterday or the last time I did a show. This bag is not to be kept at your house. For whatever reason, you're found out for something that you've done, and, you know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, beat feet home, you know, or drive like a maniac to your house to pick up, you know, your essential bag, because you're going to be met there by every alphabet soup of organization. Okay, so definitely keep that thing away from your house, a covert place, whether it's a nondescript storage facility that no one knows about that you have. Maybe you got a cache somewhere. And don't forget, just real quick, change of clothes, nondescript earth tone colors, 500 hours cash, and everything waterproofed, okay? And if you can, maybe a small caliber pistol, something like a 380, and not a ton of ammunition, just a couple magazines with some rounds in it, okay? The main thing you want, you want this bag to be light, because you may have to put a lot of miles on your feet. It's counterproductive for you to be humping a bag like you're an Army Ranger going into the bush with 110 pounds of equipment, okay? So you don't want the bag to be heavy. And don't forget that when you escape and evade, nothing familiar, okay? I watched an episode of Manhunters yesterday. And when U.S. Marshals look for you and they think you're with an accomplice, they look in their search for a lead, they look at the telephone history of your accomplice, you know, and they cross-reference things and this and that, and then they find out, okay, he could possibly be at, you know, this girl's aunt's house in Queens, New York, or wherever. When you're on the run and you know, you've been found out or maybe falsely accused of something, you know, kind of like the future with Harrison Ford, nothing familiar. You remember in that movie, Harrison Ford went back to the Cook County Hospital to, you know, do whatever, find the one-armed man or whatever. Nothing, if you ever need to go on the run because of your ghost wolf activities, nothing familiar, okay? You got to just man up, grab your balls, and just, you know, hit the road. Hit the road. Don't visit any Army friends. Don't visit friends you haven't seen in 15 years. Believe me, they will find that person that you knew or had contact with 15 years ago, and they will be put that house under surveillance. So just go on your own. Go, you know, if you're known for a person who hates hot weather, chances are you may blend in real well in a hot weather climate. If you're somebody who loves skiing, and remember, they're going to have these psychological profiles about you. If you're an avid skier or snowboarder, they're going to be looking at Colorado and Wyoming for you and stuff like that. So you got to totally reinvent yourself, okay? If you're a country western fan, you know, you may need to become a, you know, remember, you're deep cover now. You know, you're not selling your way to do it, but you may need to become a blues guy. You know, oh, I like Buddy Guy. I like, you know, Robert Crow or Robert Cray, whatever the hell his name is, you know. Okay. I want to talk real quick about my, I had a small block of training when I was in the Army at Sentry Removal. And this was at Fort Hood, Texas. And basically it was at night. We had to, you know, we were graded by our, you know, sergeant in charge when we did this. We'd lay off to the side of a road. All we had was a rubber knife, you know, a training implement. We're not going to stab our, you know, our compadres with a real knife. So we had a rubber knife, and we didn't have any LCE or any equipment on. It was just us. We were behind enemy lines. You know, we need to escape and evade, do whatever. So sentry removal. Okay, I noticed that the best way, that you have a better chance on blitzing the sentry if you're to the opposite side of where the muzzle of his rifle is pointing. If he's a left-handed shooter, you know, when he's walking his beat or walking down a trail, he's going to have the, if he's a left-handed shooter, the muzzle of the weapon is going to be off to the right side of the trail. So, and don't forget, most people on the planet, 99% of people on the planet are right-handed, so most likely the muzzle of their rifle would be to the left side of the trail. But the guy I was going against, and he already shot, didn't shoot him for real, but this is training, remember that. But, you know, he neutralized three other guys before I was tasked to go and conduct this training. So I'm like, man, how am I going to get the jump on this guy? You know, this guy's tagging everybody in my platoon. So what I did, I laid off to the side of the road. I covered myself with a lot of pine needles, and I paid for it the next day because I was eaten alive by chiggers. But anyways, when he passed me by, I slowly and stealthily raised myself up, and I had a rock in my hand, okay? And I threw the rock over his head, not right over his head, because over here that go by. I threw the rock in a high arc and had it crash through the branches on the other side of the road. He instantly heard all the ruckus of that rock going through the branches. He thought someone was rushing him from his right. I'm coming at him from his left. I grabbed him by the chin, okay? I slammed my rubber knife into his kidneys, which is either side of his spine, right above the belt, and I slammed my right foot, the bottom of my right foot, into the back of his right knee, breaking him down. And I was like the only one to pass that block of training in my platoon. But just, that will work. If I can do it, you guys can do it. Okay. On your mark, get set, go. Time to initiate Project Mayhem, Project Disorder, Project Chaos. First rule of Project Mayhem is what? If you remember the movie, do not ask questions. If anybody's asking pointed questions and, you know, if they're a friend or a foe, not a foe, but if they're a friend or a family member asking you questions, you need to be suspicious of that. If you have family members asking questions about your activities, you may need to change some things because you don't want no one being suspicious of you, especially family. Family will notice things before a stranger will, okay? I've come up with 14 rules. You know, and maybe some of you guys are saying, who the fuck are you, Frank Bauer, setting the parameters of what a ghost wolf is? Listen, I will gladly turn this microphone over to people who are more knowledgeable and more skilled at the things I'm talking about, because what's good for the race, I'm totally okay with, okay? This is not about me. I'm not here for self-glorification or to win a popularity contest. I don't give a damn what anybody out there in the radio listening audience thinks of me. I think what I'm doing is important. I want to do my part. I think I know some things due to practical experience. It's worked for me. And I'm sick and tired of seeing our people going to jail over bullshit because they didn't plan things out. But 14 rules I came up with. I like that number, 14. First rule of Ghost Wolf is you do not talk about Ghost Wolf. Second rule of Ghost Wolf is you do not talk about Ghost Wolf. You do not talk about your activities. You do not talk about your racial beliefs. Like the guy who wrote it on the Aryan Update maybe a month ago or so. Yeah, he's at work and he's got his work area, his workstation, you know. Yeah, black athletes posters on there, and he's got the Hanukkah sign and all that other stuff. And, you know, he's getting addresses from people so he can send them Christmas cards or happy Hanukkah cards. That guy's a prototype of everything I've been discussing so far, as far as swimming in the sea of people, I mean. Third rule. You are absolutely to leave no paper or electronic trails during the commission of your Ghost Wolf activities. You absolutely do not use a gas card, a credit card. You do not write a check at a certain location. Nothing. Okay? You are absolutely free of all paper and electronic trails during your activities. Fourth rule, no passing judgment on others' activities. You know what? I've heard people talk bad about Benjamin Smith. And you may not agree with his activities or what he did. You just need to shut the fuck up about it, because he was a man who saw, who within the realm of his own experience and his own knowledge, decided to go out and do something that he felt he needed to do. Stop passing judgment on that. And that's why we need to deal ruthlessly with the right wing. Because the way they just badmouth Robert J. Matthews and David Lane, we don't want to ignore these guys. If we have a chance to ruthlessly deal with them, we need to, because, you know, they're badmouthing the true heroes of our movement. You know, if you're going to pass out flyers, you're not going to be a hero, okay? If you want to take extracurricular activities that are more influential, then you need to be held in a higher regard. And regardless of what anyone out there thinks of Ben Smith and what he did, I have much respect for him. Fifth rule, when active, when committing your Ghost Wolf activities, you want to dress in a nondescript, uncharacteristic attire. Okay? Now, if you want to buy an Adidas t-shirt, that's an aqua blue Adidas t-shirt with the logo Adidas across it, you know, because that's sure to be picked up by a surveillance camera that you don't know or you haven't seen. You know, that's something that the alphabet people will be looking for, and they'll be like, oh man, I can't wait to check who's ever closet, you know, who's a person of interest. I want to find that shirt. First thing you're going to do when you're done, you're going to burn that shirt. Also, I noticed today, or the other day, I was watching a show on forensics, and footprints were traced back to a guy. Listen, whatever footwear you wear, and that's why they got Payless shoes. That's, you know, I'm sure they got one in your area. That's good Ghost Wolf shoe footwear there, you know, because it's cheap. You're not going to keep it a long time. I recommend that if you wear a pair of boots or a pair of shoes, a cheap pair, during a commission of something or some form of activity, that you take maybe a acetylene torch or a blowtorch to the sole of them before you try to burn them. You may burn all your Ghost Wolf clothes and think that everything's covered, but the tread on the shoes is still there. So I recommend totally defacing the tread of that shoe, which would take, you know, I think before you burn everything, take an acetylene torch or a blowtorch or whatever to the sole and just totally melt the shit out of it so it's indescribable. Okay. Sixth rule. Recon routes to and from the objective thoroughly. You don't want to be running from an objective or something you did, and when you get to the end of the street, you're like, you know, which way did he go? Which way did he go? We don't need that. You know, you don't need that. You need to know exactly where you're going when you're beating feet out of an area, when you're escaping, evading out of an area. And please, don't use the terrain to your advantage. Don't run from somewhere two blocks down a busy street and then cut up. I mean, there's too many people seeing you. Plan your escape route. I mean, put a lot of thought into it. You know, run up an alley. You know, you come to a dead end at the alley, but, you know, you find some tracks. Follow the tracks down to a field. Follow the field up to a stream. Follow the stream south you know, for maybe a half a mile to where you parked your car. I mean, come on, you know, be put some thought into your routes. Seventh rule, always act with casual confidence. If you're going through your activities and you've got your, like, hard Manson-like face, you know, your Manson lamps, you got the hard stare because you're out on the plow or you're doing your thing. Listen, you need to learn to have a poker face. When you're out and about on your activities, have a soft look on your face. You cross people on the street, you know, even if they're people of color, maybe give them a nod with a slight smile or whatever. You want anyone who meets you or sees you to forget about you 5 minutes later. If you got a hard look on your face, that's going to stand out, okay? So always act with casual confidence. Don't look over your shoulder furtively when you're going through the motions. Casual confidence. You have every reason to be where you're at, okay? Eighth rule, you must work to obtain the highest level of physical fitness. If you're in your mid-20s or early 20s, you guys have no excuse. In the matter of 6 months to a year, you guys should be in the shape of a Navy SEAL, okay? I recommend you stay away from weights. Weights bulk up muscles. Muscles require a lot of oxygen intake. If you're fighting multiple opponents and you're running for your life, you're going to gas out quicker than a guy who's just physically fit. He doesn't have big, bulging muscles, but he's physically fit, okay? I recommend staying away from, pumping iron, trying to get a big muscle mass. I see too many guys. I mean, I've been to rallies and stuff, and too many skinheads and too many activists think that, you know, that's going to help them out in the long run. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen a muscle-bound guy gas out in a fight and then get his ass kicked, okay? Gas out within, like, the first couple of minutes. I know a lot of the stuff you guys have already had, you've already had in other shows, but it's good to rehearse it and get it down to a format, a formula of 14 rules here. Okay, ninth rule, you must train in some form of hand-to-hand combat. I recommend Jeet Kune Do. We've talked about this before. I recommend Kempo Karate. And I recommend Krav Maga. What the fuck are you saying, Frank? That's an Israeli martial art. Yeah, I know it's an Israeli martial art. They pretty much stole a lot of the techniques from other martial arts and made their own. I mean, that was actually smart of them to do that. So give credit where credit is due. Krav Maga is a great martial art to learn. It's a great hand-to-hand combat system to learn. You know, you find a training facility near you or something like it, okay, and you just check your beliefs at the door. Come on, think of the prize here. This is a marathon, not a sprint. Okay, you guys are deep cover. You're parachuted behind enemy lines. Krav Maga was put together by some Czech guy. I don't even want to go into history of that, but it's a good martial art. You guys that have had years in Taekwondo, Hapkido, Aikido, which are the martial arts I recommend you guys to stay away from if you're new to the martial arts, because it takes years and years for you to have any level of, you know, efficiency. I don't recommend those martial arts at all. If you guys got years of training in that, well, good for you. Just supplement that training with some of the other styles that I've talked about. But if you're new to this, if you're new to the martial arts thing, I recommend you stay away from those martial arts. And I don't want to step on any toes there, but, you know, if the shoe fits, wear it. Okay, 10th rule, seek all the knowledge you can on pistol craft and weapons training. You need to know how to handle your sidearm, whether you have a Sig Sauer or a Beretta, Taurus, Glock, whatever. You need to know how to handle it properly with confidence. You don't want any misfires. I gave you a video the other month, I guess about a month ago, defending Sewell, and there's a lot more training, believe it or not, on YouTube dealing with stuff like that. But there's videotape series out there. I've sent Tom Metzger many videotapes that he's making DVDs for. It'd be good for you to drop the guy some money. He's putting in all this work, but the knowledge is there. I mean, you guys should be beating down this fucking door trying to get this knowledge. Every one of you out there, if you call yourself an activist, or if you want to live up to the gold medal standard of an activist, which is a ghost wolf, you need this information, okay? Stop being lazy. Fork over a little dough. It's not going to kill you. Maybe, you know, stop drinking beer for a week and get this. Weapons training. You got to know how to knife fight, defend against the knife. You got to know how to stick fight. Because stick fighting could be used for a broken broom handle, could be axe handle, whatever. You know, you got to know how to fight with bludgeons, okay? All right. 11th rule, you must always carry a knife. I really want the white resistance movement to be a knife culture because, like I said before, we may run into a future someday where we don't have firearms, so we need to be proficient in bladed instruments. All right, if knives are against the law, start carrying a pen around wherever you go. I have a pen from a podiatrist office I got about a year ago. It's just a regular ballpoint pen, but at the other end of it, it has a foot. It's a beautiful place for me to put my thumb when I'm using the pen in a stabbing motion. So when you see stuff like that, get it. Carry it around with you. Okay. Rule 12. Sterilize home and workplace of all racialism. Listen, if you want to be serious about this stuff, you have a swastika tattoo, you need to get rid of it. Or not tattoo, but a t-shirt. You need to get rid of it. You need to get rid of your screwdriver t-shirts and stuff like that. And your Iron Cross stuff that says Sieg Heil on it. I mean, get rid of that stuff because we got to go for new tactics. It's a new age. All the stuff we tried in the past has not worked. You are not setting a proper example for your race. You're really not. I mean, basically, you're just putting a bullseye on your back. And when the system does go more tyrannical than it is now, they're just going to knock on your door in the middle of the night and just take you away, and no one's ever going to see you again. You don't think that can happen? That has happened throughout history. Don't think the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is going to defend your white ass. Okay? Rule 13, if you spend time reading, I implore upon you guys to concentrate almost entirely on reading that has a tactical significance. You know, I'm going to just jump out on a limb right now and say to everyone in the radio club, you really don't need it. You don't need to read any more racial stuff about the Jews and the niggers. You guys know all that stuff. If you're a new guy just coming on and you need to learn some things, fine. You know, maybe Tom Nestor can direct you to some proper reading material that'll get you up to snuff on stuff like that. But honestly, I really recommend tactical reading, something that has a tactical reading to, like The Art of War, written by a chink, so what? Suck it up and drive on, okay? The Book of Five Rings, Machiavelli, the Prince. Machiavelli also wrote something else called The Art of War. Maybe von Clausewitz on War, the Prussian guy who wrote that pretty magisterial book back in, 17th century, 16th, I don't know. Okay, rule 14, the 14th and final rule, and you can add to this and maybe, and a lot of these rules, they encompass other areas, okay? They're not just set in stone where they are. Like, for example, rule 14, neutralize all flaws in your character that can be exploited. You know, it goes back to what I've said numerous times on this show. Socrates said, know thyself. Know your limitations. Don't think if you're 50 years old, you're going to go into a building and take on 50 guys, okay? That's just not realistic. Stop watching movies like Die Hard. I mean, you're really not learning good stuff, you know? I want to talk about movies. I'm really on this anti-Hollywood thing right now. You know, you ghost fools out there, don't go see Paul Blart, Mall Cop. Don't go see stupid shit like that where white guys are portrayed as dumbasses and ignoramuses, and in the end they maybe redeem some quality. Don't spend your money on that shit, guys. Come on. Go see stuff that maybe you can learn some kind of tactic or technique. You know, Quantum of Solace. You know, I think that may still be out the theaters. How about this movie coming out with Liam Neeson at the end of January? Taken. You know, I guess his daughter is kidnapped and he's a retired assassin or something like that. Okay, so that's the 14 rules. We can add to that maybe, but I think 14 is a good number. Okay, I watched an episode of Homeland Security USA last night on ABC. Basically, it's a dog and pony show. And the Mexican border officials and the Mexican customs personnel, I mean, they were just really mugging for the camera. I mean, you know, treating the Mexican illegal alien Mexicans, you know, kind of like, not gruffly, but, you know, with a stern demeanor, you know. I don't want, come on, that's like the fox guarding the hen house. You know, I mean, every time I see some kind of story about border patrol agents, almost all of them are Mexican. Come on. The Mexican people are a nationalistic people, more so than white people. And, you know, their nationalism is really based on race. It's not, I mean, I've heard it's based on language, but I think it's based more on race than what people give it credit for. So don't fall for this propaganda like the United States is really doing something about our borders. It's bullshit. And an African guy on there sobbing and just plays at the heartstrings of the white audience who's watching this show about how he needs to stay in the country because no one will take care of his sons. And the guy's a multi-felon. I mean, the guy has been in trouble with the law numerous times, you know. We need hard-headed altruism, and, you know, that's not our problem. There was one lady who smuggled a 5-year-old Mexican girl back across the border, and it took them, like, almost 2 days to find out if the little girl was an American citizen or a Mexican citizen. I don't give a fuck if she is, an American citizen on paper. She's not of our country, and she don't belong here. It makes me sound like a hard-ass. Listen, I'm not somebody who takes pleasure in watching children suffer. I don't see children suffer. Not black or brown or yellow children, but I am hard-headed altruism. It's our race that's on the line here. It's our race that has a very real potentiality of disappearing from the planet easily within the next 150 years. And that's not hyperbole, that is a fact. Okay, just a little bit of info here. I want to use the update line phone number as an example for this, okay? Your phone number is broken up into three parts. You got the area code, the prefix, and the suffix. The area code for Tom Metzger's update line is 574. His prefix is 267. And the suffix is 5036. If you get a number, a suspicious number on your caller ID, where the suffix starts with a 9, that's a payphone. Okay, so for example, if you get a number on your caller ID and it's a strange call, you're like, what the fuck is going on here, you know? You don't know what's going on. Is someone setting you up? Law enforcement's fucking around doing whatever? Look at the phone number. If it says, for example, 574-267-9036, that's a payphone. If the first number of the suffix is a 9, it's a payphone. Okay, we had a phone number here in Chicago a couple years ago. I believe it's been deactivated, but it may still be active in other cities, so check it out. So whatever area code your city goes by, the number is 796-9600. And basically with this number, you were able to do, it would be like an automated service. You get this, they give you a pause and say punch in whatever number. You punch in someone's telephone number and it gives you the address of the person. So maybe you guys are much more technically savvy than I am. Check that out. Maybe something to look into. Okay. If you ever have to B&E for whatever reason, let's say somebody's got a piece of property that's very valuable and belongs to you, and let's say, for example, law enforcement doesn't help you out or whatever, if you have to ever break and enter B&E, when you come up to your window, and like I said, you use your glass cutter, you use your triangle, because straight lines are easier to cut in glass than circles, so do your triangle over the locking mechanism, put a piece of duct tape over the glass and your triangle, push on a little bit, maybe stifling the sound even more so with the rag. Put a rag over the duct tape portion that you cut out. Push on and just peel the tape off, and you got a triangular piece of glass there. Look for glass break sensors on the window. They'll be unmistakable. You'll see them. And if you get inside the room and you're looking for your personal piece of property, take your little hand flashlight and quickly scan the corners of the room, because that's where your motion sensors will be mounted, maybe close to the doorway. Don't just flash this flashlight all over the freaking room. That'll be seen from outside. That'll be noticed. So you keep the beam of light on the floor. You know where a corner is. You flash up real quick to see if there's a sensor. Bring the beam of light back down to the floor. You come up to the other corner. Do it like that. Don't just flash this flashlight all over the room. That will be seen, and that will attract attention. Okay. Make sure I cover everything here on this sheet. All right, I want to point out something here. There was a beautiful white girl, I mean, young white girl, like a junior, senior in high school, named Callie Jo Larson. She lived in the town of Waseca, Minnesota. She was ruthlessly murdered by a spit illegal alien by the name of Lorenzo Sanchez. And the reason, that this murder happened, I don't remember when. I think it was maybe in the late 90s and the early 2000 decade. This murder happened. They're like, man, who could have done this? Well, a cop was on patrol one night, and, he passed up a guy walking along the street with his hands in his pocket, dressed in dark clothing. Cop didn't think nothing of it. But when the cop passed him by and the cop looked in the rearview mirror, he noticed that the guy turned around abruptly and started walking the other way. Well, that was behavior that sent up a red flag to the cop. He turned around, pulled the guy over, and he found a flashlight and a screwdriver on him. And it turned out to be an illegal alien, shitskin by the name of Lorenzo Sanchez. And one thing led to another, and he was found out to be the murderer of this beautiful white girl. You know, because nobody should be walking around at night with a flashlight and a screwdriver. Them are B&E tools right there. Why do I bring this up? Hey, you ghost wolves in Minnesota area, happy hunting. Okay. I think that covers that side. I want to get all this in before I'm kicked off. Okay, I'm watching episodes 48 last night. There was a murder in Minneapolis. Okay, and the people that were involved in this murder was a man and a woman. Now, when the police caught the two, or, you know, found them, they brought them back to the station, of course, they needed to separate them, put them in different interrogation rooms. They call them interview rooms. What a euphemism that is. Okay, and, you know, the guy lawyered up almost right away, you know, and then they went back to the girls, the lady who's in another interrogation room, and, you know, they think of the language that these detectives use. They'll say that they said something like this to the girl. They said, listen, this guy's not helping you out at all. He's leaving you out to dry. They don't tell the girl that he lawyered up. They tell the girl, oh, man, he's just leaving you out to dry. You better help yourself out here. You better talk to us. This guy is not doing you any favors right now. He is not helping you out at all. He is leaving you out to dry, hanging you out to dry. You're flapping in the breeze right now. You better help yourself out. That's the type of language they use. They don't tell the girl that he lawyered up. Well, she talked, and she did time for maybe a lesser crime, but she still did time. And then he went away for 25 to life for murder. So, what's the moral of the story? Shut the fuck up and use the five words. Don't think you're going to outsmart these guys. They go through months of training to do this. They go through months of training in human psychology to get inside people's heads. Shut up. Okay, I don't remember what movie it was, but John Leguizamo was the actor, the mestizo actor, was like a drug dealer in somewhere in New York or whatever, and the cops got him in the interrogation room, and they're just hounding him, and John Leguizamo was narrating that portion of the movie. He said, all you gotta do is just turn yourself out, just go someplace else, and he didn't even say the five words, he was just mute, and they're just like, you know, howling up one side of him, down the other. I don't remember the name of the movie, but that is worth seeing. I heard a cop say on TV the other night, talking about interrogations or interviews with people. He said there are two types of people who give information, to the police. Those that just want to give information, just put information out in a nonchalant manner, and then there are those who want to convince the police of the information. The people who try to convince the police of the information, that sends up a red flag to them. Now, I started thinking about that. I wonder if that was maybe a piece of misinformation that the police are putting out. Maybe they don't want people to really just, you know, go balls out and declare their innocence or anything like that. Maybe he meant another way about that. You want to idiot-proof the thing? Shut the fuck up and just use the five words. Don't think you can outsmart them. Don't think you're going to pull some kind of crafty thing on them. Just use the five words, guys. It works, you know. What's the old saying? If nobody talks, everyone walks. Okay. Well, I came across this story, and this is really the last thing I had to talk about, and this is good. I kind of rushed through the other stuff. If I went too fast for you, you know, play the program again. I came across a story about two bank robbers that lived in the Chicago area back in 1991. And they robbed maybe a couple of banks in Chicago, but most of their bank robberies were in the northwest suburban area of Chicago, like Hoffman Estates, Elk Grove Village, Arlington Heights, you know, that area. And their name was Jeffrey and Jill Erickson. It was a married couple, like a Bonnie and Clyde. And they had a death pact that if they were ever apprehended or anything like that, that they would just off themselves right then and there. And I was really moved by this story. I mean, I'm I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have it in me to rob banks. I don't. I'm somewhat of a nervous Nelly kind of guy. You know, I'm always over-analyzing things. And maybe, you know, that could be, well, I'll tell you what, I am over-analyzing. It has gotten me out of trouble, you know, read between the lines there. But, you know, I just think it's an interesting story. It was a white couple, and they lived in Hanover Park, suburb of Chicago. Let me just read some things. I'm trying to make. They were called the. I guess the man was doing most of the robbing. He was called the Bearded Bandit. And his police. He would have a police scanner with him, and it would warn. I mean, during the commission of his robbery, it would. I mean, he would be listening to the scanner. It would warn him to let him know if anyone in the bank maybe pressed a button or whatever. You know, and when it got to be known that he was carrying a scanner with him, then he came up with this elaborate coded system. So. He didn't know what it was. But all he had to do was just listen to a code being put out over the airways of this police scanner. He should have beat him out. And he did. He did that to see if any silent alarms were triggered. Robberies were spread out throughout multiple agencies. I mean, they didn't, you know, rob banks that were right next to each other or in the same neighborhood. They were like miles apart from each bank. And it kind of confused. It made it more confusing because it made multiple agencies get involved in things. And when that happens, it just tends to add to the confusion. The getaway cars, they stole from mall parking lots, and they surveilled the mall parking lots. They only stole the cars of mall employees. You know, they would steal the car at the beginning of the guy's shift, maybe after a half hour after he's been inside the mall, and the car wouldn't be reported stolen for another 8 hours. Okay, so that was working to their advantage. Okay, so he had at least eight before... Okay, he had at least 8 hours before the car was stolen. Okay, I got to read my chicken scratch here. Okay, police started using codes to signify which bank. Okay, I already talked about that because he had a police scanner with him. Okay, he was wearing obvious disguises. I mean, this fake beard he was wearing, I mean, it just stood out to people. I mean... There's one bank that he walked into wearing this beard, and a lady across the street immediately got on her cell phone and started calling police because it looks too obvious. I mean, the guy was smart in a lot of ways. I mean, both of them were smart, but I would have done away with the beards, man, because that just stood out when they're walking to and from the bank. Okay, they never went for the vault. Well, they went for the vault a couple times, but I felt that they burned too much time by going to the vault. I don't know. I just like to psychoanalyze things. And when the police arrived, they didn't have sirens blaring. They always approached the bank stealthily, you know. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, they would steal cars and let them set for at least a day or so. Okay, when the police started getting, or the FBI started getting onto that MO, they had police in that jurisdiction or all over the northwestern area of Chicago, metropolitan area, patrolling parking lots looking for stolen cars. And when they found one, they just reported it, and they didn't tow it, and whatever. They would just put it under surveillance from that time forward. What I think they should have done was maybe somehow have some person keep that. I'm talking about the bank robbery crew. They should have kept the car under surveillance themselves. Then they would have known something was up. Okay, the police staked out the stolen cars. FBI removed the cars and replaced the stolen cars with lookalikes so they can install tracking devices on the stolen cars. Okay, picture that now. The FBI, say they find the car, they come in the middle of the night, they take the stolen car to another location, and they put in a lookalike car just in case maybe the bank robbers drive by to see if the car is still okay. They put a tracking device on the stolen car and bring it back to the same spot and take the lookalike and get it out of there. Okay. You know, when they were found out, when things went haywire for them, the guy was brought into custody. You know, he was surrounded by a SWAT team, and then a couple of times he went for a pistol in his bag next to him. They said, "Don't do it, don't do it," and he put his hands up again, and a couple of times he would try to go for his gun. "Don't do it, I'll fucking shoot you," and this and that. But the wife, when the other FBI team that had the wife under surveillance, and she was in disguise also, she was driving a van. I don't even want to waste radio time how they use this van, but just get the gist here. She peeled out. She was running. I mean, she was driving this fucking van and shooting the cops with this MP5 submachine gun. I mean, this girl had some balls, man. I was really impressed with her tenacity. And then, you know, when it's a driving shootout through the streets of, I don't remember what town it was, maybe Palatine, Illinois, I'm not sure. But, they shot her, and she crashed the van, and, the FBI was like, get out of the van, get out of the van! And they heard one single gunshot right there in the cab of the van. She took her own life. Okay? Somebody found, they knew who it was. By then, when they found out about the stolen cars and they started following the people who were stealing the cars and then putting the cars in place. Hello? Fuck, I can hear myself again. Anyways, when they found, when they put them under surveillance and they tracked them down to the town home that they were living in so they knew who they were, okay? And, let me read this real quick here. Okay, she was running and gunning during the chase. When they went into the house after they had the one guy in the custody and the girl was dead, they found guns everywhere. They had weapons stashed everywhere throughout the house. I mean, it was just amazing. They found a VCR queued up to the scene of some movie with Bonnie and Clyde. I forgot who was in that movie. I guess it was from the 70s. This movie of Bonnie and Clyde, when they get shot up at the end of the movie after they're, trying to make a break from a robbery or whatever, and they both die. And I guess they watched that every time they, before they would go do a job, And this couple was amazing. Jeffrey and Jill Erickson, if you want to go to crimelibrary.com and just read on them, pretty fucking amazing. Okay, they would watch that scene of Bonnie and Clyde during the court. All right, listen to this. Now, the guy was taken into custody. During the court proceedings, when the marshals were transporting him, Jeffrey Erickson, he disarmed one of the marshals in the elevator. When they were leaving the elevator, he found somebody to pick the lock on his handcuffs, and he was in a suit. He disarmed, as people were exiting the elevator, he disarmed the one U.S. Marshal and shot and killed the other one, and he was hauling ass for freedom through this parking lot. And he was 40 feet away from a crowded street when he got in a shootout with a police officer or some municipality. I forgot. I think it was a Cook County Sheriff or Chicago cop. And, they both killed each other. He was hit like four times. Jeffrey Erickson was hit four times. And the policeman was hit once and he died later. And, both the U.S. Marshal and the police were posthumously awarded the Medal of Valor. But, man, I got to tell you, I was really moved by this story. Not that I condone the institution of robbing banks, but I really just share this story with you guys, as a lesson. Don't rob banks. It's against the law. Don't do bad things. Don't resist the slaughter of your race. We're not being physically slaughtered, but our genetic and biological heritage is being swallowed up by the other races like a game of fucking Pac-Man. Don't resist that. You're not supposed to. If you want to be a good citizen, good boy and girl, good little boys and girls, and you want to be loved by the baby Jesus, you got to be tolerant and loving towards black, brown, and yellow. And you got to obey all the laws. And if the law states that blacks are going to be your neighbors and your bosses and your sons-in-laws and daughters-in-laws and your mayors and chiefs of police and your presidents, and finally, when there's very little white people left and they start hunting the last white remnants down because of revenge, for what the whites did by bringing blacks into North America's slaves, even though we did them the greatest favor that their race has ever experienced, you're not supposed to resist that. You're supposed to turn the other cheek and be a good little boy and girl and don't resist the destruction of your race. Okay? That's being a law-abiding citizen. That's what they teach us in school. I remember being a little kid in the Chicago public school system. 5 or 6 years old, they had Officer Friendly come in, at least a couple times a year, talk about obeying the law. Always obey the law. Didn't do me too bit of good because I was busting school windows a month later. Bad little kid. I was a hellion. But I hope you guys find this information informative. Hope you guys are making smart decisions. And I hope you guys realize what we're up against. We are up against, not using any hyperbole, we are up against the literal, not figuratively speaking, the literal genocide an extinction of the white race. I know you hear that a lot. You may hear that a lot from me. You may hear that sometimes from Tom Metzger or maybe other people. That's not hyperbole. That is a fact. The biological and genetic heritage of our race is being swallowed up by the other races, and it's being nullified and neutralized in other aspects. Like this shit-skin, piece-of-shit, fucking spick, Lorenzo Sanchez, who's in some Minnesota prison now, who's got three hots in a cot. Your tax dollars are feeding him, clothing him. He's getting decent health care. And what is he, and how did he get to that? You know, I know prison's not a terrific place, but he doesn't have to worry about a job ever again or paying a mortgage. I mean, in one respect, how did he get that prestige? Believe me, he's got prestige in prison now because he's in prison for murder. Guys who commit murder, they're at the top of the food chain in the prison. I mean, they call the shots. And he got that way because he murdered a beautiful white girl. Because she walked in on him robbing her house. And where's the outrage? We used to lynch niggers 100 years ago when they raped a white girl. No outrage. We're just sitting on our ass and letting shit happen. I know on one side of my mouth I'm saying, you know, white collateral damage. I'm talking about white collateral damage when we do something. Because most of our race is gone to shit right now, and maybe it takes some hard shit to wake them up. But I still can't help but get angry as hell when I hear about this. You know, and then maybe if I put a name to a face every now and then on one of these programs, maybe we'll take it personal. You know, like Chai Vang, that piece of shit, Hmong yellow nigger piece of shit who shot those six hunters in the Wisconsin woods a couple years ago. And remember, the bodies were strewn out over hundreds of meters, meaning he ran each one down and killed them. And he said he was in the woods hunting. He's got a fucking assault rifle in the woods. You don't hunt with an assault rifle, you dumbass. You hunt with a 30-06 or a 30-30. Them are good hunting rifles. But he ran them all down. And one of those hunters, one of those white hunters, was a white woman. And I told you guys numerous times that his fucking family lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. You know? Happy hunting. First rule of Ghost Wolf is you don't talk about Ghost Wolf. Second rule of Ghost Wolf is you do not talk about Ghost Wolf. Third rule, absolutely no written electronic trails. Fourth rule, no passing judgment on others' activities. If they're distributing literature, you want to talk shit about them, you have my blessing. The only people I'll excuse to do something like that are the newbies who are just coming on to the resistance movement and the elderly. I don't expect the elderly to go out there and just do ruthless shit. You know, you guys, maybe you came on board late in your life and you just do the best you can. You guys would be the best ones to operate safe houses. Stay away from organizations and stay away from mailing lists. Fifth rule, when active, you dress in nondescript, not uncharacteristic attire. Sixth rule, recon routes to and from your objective thoroughly. Seventh rule, always, always act with casual confidence. Eighth rule, you must work to obtain the highest level of physical fitness possible. Ninth rule, you must train in some form of hand-to-hand combat. 10th rule, seek all knowledge you can in pistol craft and weapons training. 11th rule, you must always carry a knife or a stabbing implement like a ballpoint pen. 12th rule, sterilize home and workplace of all racialism. 13th, you must spend, if you're going to spend time reading, concentrate almost entirely on reading material that is tactically significant. 14th and final rule, neutralize all flaws in your character that can be exploited. What are your addictions? Are they alcohol? Are they nicotine? Are they drugs? Are they sugar? Neutralize that shit now if you're going to be effective for our race. You have the moral high ground. We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. You must starve the sheep in you and feed the wolf. This is not a lecture. I am merely allowing you a chance to look at this terrestrial ball of shit called Earth through my eyes. And we live under a black heretical sun because we're living in, you know, universal disorder. You know, the proper universal order would be with us on top of the food chain telling, you know, how shit's going to be. You know, if that offends white liberals and people of color, who gives a shit? I mean, look at the Chinese. They're technologically advanced, but they're causing the world a lot of harm with their overpopulation, what they have yet to do anything about with this one child per family bullshit. Obviously, they're getting around that somehow. So, let's get active. Let's start doing good deeds. And don't ever talk about them. Don't talk about them because you want Tom Metzger's approval or you want David Duke's approval. I don't know why you'd want his. But, let's get active, okay? Harpe Noctem 14.
Well, there you go. Guerrilla Radio Man. Yeah. Guerrilla Radio Man. And he's putting out some good stuff there. And you better listen. You better listen. Yeah. Don't forget, we've got translation capabilities now up there on resist.com. And send your checks and money orders for your items and your dues. Send that to the P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, and make that out to Tom Metzger or the Insurgent, or simply cash. But then also send a copy of that order to merchandise at resist.com, and that's the fastest way you're going to get your items. So that's it for today, and I'm sure that you've got plenty there to digest, and old Frankie, he gets wound up, doesn't he? Yeah, I like that. Okay, we'll talk to you later in 14.5. Most people are always wrong when it's most important to be right. Yeah, and no cause is lost as long as one person is still fighting for it.
Truth. A drunk falling down, or a man who has the proof. voice of reason with your head full of doubt. In your eyes, my dignified old lad. In your eyes, my warrior or babe. In your eyes, do I intimidate or lead? From my eyes, the forces that I bleed.
I again, I see you.
Insurgent Radio calling. Insurgent Radio calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the Heartland. In the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Evil Tavern. Where the elite meet to drink most of the time. And sometimes they even eat. And that's right next to our weapons of mass destruction salvage yard, reconditioning and salvage yard, where we sand and repaint and bring them in from all over the world. You know, the United States sends weapons all over the world, and they're used a couple of times, and then these blacks and so forth in these other countries, they can't figure out how to operate them, so they just push them off the side of the road because they're out of gas. So we scour the world and get ourselves a Somali pirate, and he can take one of those ships he hijacks and loads them up and brings them on over here, and we paint them up, sand them down, get them all ready to go, and ship them out again. So there's Uncle Sammy spreading joy through the world. Joy, joy around the world. Well, this is going to be show B for Friday, Freya's Day. Might even run it on Saturday, I'm not sure. But anyhow, no matter when you get it, it's going to be fresh. Won't be very old. Yeah. Well, let's see here. Now, we have an interesting situation here. The Jews are getting hammered all over the world. Of course, it's quite clear why they're getting hammered in Europe. It says here, amid anti-Semitic, well, that should not be, no, whenever they say anti-Semitic, just say anti-Jew, because it's not an anti-Arab storm, it's an anti-Jew storm. Amid anti-Jew storm, Europe's Jews stand for Israel. No shit. Well, I don't think many of them are standing for the Palestinians or the Arabs in general. Some of them are. This is in Prague, this article, confronting a rising storm of anti-Jewism as the conflict in Gaza intensifies. European Jews are grappling with the best way to express their support for Israel's fight against Hamas. You'd think that Hamas had invaded Israel, the way it sounds. Recent assaults on Jews in European capitals range from the beating of a Jewish teenager in a Paris suburb by assailants who vowed she would pay for Israel's acts to the compilation on an Islamic website of a hit list of prominent British Jews. Well, you see, it's world news when one Jew gets beaten up. Just think of all the white kids that are beaten up, white Aryan kids beaten up every day around this country by savage Negroes, as Derek McThomas would call them, and Hal Turner, too. These savage Negroes. Yeah. Well, so they've got a hit list of prominent British Jews. Well, it's okay with me. Jewish monuments in France and Sweden have been firebombed, and in Italy, a workers' political party called for a boycott of Jewish stores. Well, that's okay, too. While Jews have taken to the streets in hundreds or thousands to demonstrate for peace and Israel's right to defend itself, they are dwarfed by the tens of hundreds of thousands participating in protests against Israel. In many cases, top European political figures have supported the protests. Sometimes the rallies have turned violent. Now I'm getting to the good stuff here. Well, not good, really. The 27-country European Union has approximately 1.8 million Jews. Well, spread out over all those countries, that's too much. Not too much, but of course you know that a large percentage of that 1.8 million Jews have wormed their way into commerce and banking and movies and the media. So they have a hell of a lot more control than you think. And of course, their control behind the scenes of Christian churches and so forth like that. Not maybe as much in Europe as in the United States. But here's the kicker. and 17 million Muslims. Yes, 17 million Muslims. And that difference is keenly visible in the size of events relating to the war in Gaza and southern Israel. Well, you see, the Europeans, their governments, due to deals and fighting the Arabs, so-called fighting terrorism, all this bullshit that's been spread around, have taken these people in. Let them come in. Just let them come in. What the hell? Izaki, just come on in and sit down. Here, I'll sell you a liquor store. So now they got 17 million Muslims spread around the Europe. And I don't think it said, since England or UK is not in the EU, I guess, they're not talking about how many Muslims there are in the UK. After some 1,000 Jews turned out last week for a rally in Brussels in the support of Israel, held opposite the embassy of Iran, which funds Hamas, tens of thousands showed up Sunday for a march against what they called Israel's massacre in Gaza. The pro-Palestinian rally was organized by three or four main political parties in the French-speaking part of Belgium, along with some 100 or so non-governmental organizations. Well, we got a big problem here, and I can see this is what the BNP is playing around with. They see the spread of all these Islamic people all over Europe and in the UK especially, and they're jumping from the frying pan into the fire, where they're going to say, "Oh, we got to stop everything. We're being, well, man, these Islamic people are taking over." Well, and then we may even have to align ourselves with the Zionist Jews. Oh, it's enough to make you cry. Not talking about the disproportionate power Jews hold in every area of government, every university, and every place you go, and the banks and Bank of England and all that kind of stuff. So even though they're certainly nowhere near the number of Jews running around, say, England as Islam, now the BNP thinks, I don't know whether they're really serious about this or what, they think they're going to switch over and not just condemn both of them like we do. We condemn both of them, the Jews and the Islamics. But they're going the other way, going to support the Zionist Jews. So if it goes that way, well, just write England off. Write the UK totally off. And certainly don't think you're going to do it with political parties. You better be listening to Gorilla Ghost Wolf and get ready and go from there. Okay, now these get-togethers, they're chanting death to the Jews in Arabic. The crowd burned Israeli flags and carried signs calling Israeli Foreign Minister Zippy Levini Hitler's wife. Well, you are studying the methods of the SS. Admit it down there, the Jewish military in Israel. In fact, one high-ranking military man admitted to studying the way the Germans crushed Warsaw, the ghetto. And so, there, of course, the Arabs are right about that. In a way, Jews feel alone, said Joel Rubenfeld, the president of the umbrella group of French-speaking Jews in Belgium, known by the acronym CCOJB. Quote, but lots of non-Jews are disgusted, too, with the anti-Jew messages, he added. Well, yeah, that's Jew think people. They're all over. They're always going to run out there. But it's sort of funny. Most of these demonstrations are mostly Islamic people, because with 17 million people in Europe, they can get a pretty good demonstration going about any time they want. So, and then there's the white people, a lot of them coming out on the side of the Jews. Massive anti-Israel demonstrations last weekend in France, Brussels, and Madrid have included anti-Semitic chants, such as Jews to the gas and swastikas paired with the Star of David. Oh boy. The Israel Foreign Ministry, the European Jewish Congress, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, there they are, and the Anti-Defamation League have implored European officials to acknowledge and combat the importing of Middle East conflict to Europe and the scapegoating of Jews. Well, who caused the problems in the Middle East? Who caused it? I mean, you went in there as colonial power, Ashkenazi white Jews, and sit down in somebody else's backyard or maybe front yard. And Jews are behind all kinds of manipulations. They've even been at one time, as it was in our show yesterday, the book was written about it, that at one time they supported Hamas. And this stuff goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and the Jews are just there as a human stick stirring the pot. And the reason there are 17 million Muslims in Europe is because of Jews, because of Israel, because of the United States, and the criminal crime families in Washington. Incidentally, the biggest criminal gave his farewell speech yesterday. I may go into that if I've got time. Countries with large Muslims, you know, color them non-white mostly, populations including France, Belgium, and Britain, have seen the largest number of anti-Jew incidents. Britain's Community Security Trust, which monitors Jewish security issues, recorded a huge surge in anti-Jew attacks, 80 in total, since Israel began bombing Hamas targets in Gaza on December 27th. Well, now all these race-mixing bastards are stuck on the horns of a dilemma. You know, they're supposed to love all these greasy non-whites, but yet they're supposed to support Israel above everything. So I love to see this predicament because, like I said, we could give a damn about either side. Neither side is interested in the integrity of the white race, the white European race, the white North American race, or any place in the world. They don't care. They're just moving on your property and sit down and start breeding these little bastards with shawls around their head. Undeterred, British Jews staged the largest European demonstration in support of Israel's right to security in this conflict. Well, let me tell you something, boys and girls. There is no such thing as a right to anything. Now, I told you this before. There is no logic to it. There's no God-given right. Nature surely doesn't give you a right. You have maybe the ability to exist and to stay alive and use whatever force you can to make sure you stay alive, but there is no right for anything. The Israel's right to secure security in this conflict. That's bullshit. They don't have a right to exist. We don't have a right to exist. Nobody has a right to exist. If you look at it from the way they talk about rights, like it's something holy and given down to us by the almighty Jewish God. you know, the chosen faith of the Aryans for thousands of years, no matter where they were, was the sun, and as a symbol of nature's power. But you don't, the sun isn't giving you a right for anything. In fact, if you don't watch your P's and Q's, the sun will take your life away. You're out there in the desert and you run out of water. The sun has rules. It don't go against its own rules, and it'll fry your ass. So when you're talking to people and they start talking about rights, would you climb down their throat and say nobody has a right? And then they have this, what's the right that can't be taken away from you? Bullshit. Anything can be taken away from you. It can't be taken away from you because there is no such thing as a right. Nature gives you a privilege. Nature throws the basketball up and may the best person, the best race win. The best animal win. The best human survive. Sunday's demonstration, which also expressed sympathy for Palestinian civilians, drew 17,000 people to London's Trafalgar Square. Well, that's bullshit, because first they support getting arms like mad from the United States. The United States gives them. In fact, the United States government is the biggest criminal of all with their arms trading. And so they... These Jews know that Israel's armed to the teeth. They got maybe a couple of hundred nukes and the whole bit. They've got the latest jet planes, the latest tanks, and everything else. And they're in support of Israel, but if you're in support of Israel, you're in support of the invasion. You can't have it both ways. And so if they're invading Palestine, they're naturally going to run tanks and everything else over a large population. It's a very large population. Now, if they'd come out and say, look, they're demographically screwing us out, and all us European Jews are going to be no more in a while, and Israel will be all non-white, so we're going to kill all these Palestinians and get them out of here before they overrun us, yeah, I'd say, yeah, okay, that's logical. That makes sense. Okay, quote, I decided to do something after watching too much television and seeing a huge coverage of the anti-Israel demonstration, said one Jewish Londoner, Matt Freelander, who participated in a pro-Israel rally last week. You know, these rallies don't mean shit. Governments do whatever they want to do. Washington does whatever it wants to do. The government of the UK does whatever it wants to do. You could go out there and march till hell freezes over. Until you're ready to pick up a gun or a club and go into action, you have no influence on anybody or anything. In France, Nicole Yardini, the president of the CRIF Jewish Umbrella Group in Toulouse, decided not to hold a pro-Israel rally in the region after a car filled with Molotov cocktails rammed into the front gate of a synagogue January 5th. She chickened out. Quote, it's not that we are afraid, oh no, she said, of the community of approximately 20,000, but faced with the consistent pro-Palestinian rallies that outnumber Toulouse Jews, Yardini said the community could not hold its own on the street, thus could not have a successful protest. Well, where's the French police that used to protect you all the time? Where's the French army? Where's the, where are all those boys, you know? Maybe they're down in Africa working. In recent days, the CRIF held pro-Israel rallies in Paris, Marseille, and near Lyon. The Marseille's rally was unusual in that every major local politician joined the crowd of about 4,000. The Paris rally did not have the same political backing. Many attendees said they left family and friends behind because they were afraid of publicly supporting Israel after seeing the violence and the virulent anti-Jewism in a pro-Palestinian protest a day earlier. Well, I say it's okay for the Muslims to put the Jews on the run. Anything that's bad that happens to the Jews is fine with me. But on the other hand, if the Jews get rid of thousands of Islamic non-whites, that's all right with me too. So I win either way. Once again, when in trouble, we found ourselves alone, Patrick Galbert, the president of the International League Against Racism and Anti-Jewism, wrote in a letter published in January 8 in a French Jewish weekly. You know, Jews always play the victim card. Even when they're going through there bombing the shit out of those Palestinians and running over their babies, the Jews are still the victims. In Italy, whose prime minister, Silvio Berlusconi, has been honored by Jewish groups for being pro-Israel. Pro-Israel rallies drew government officials. In Germany, anti-Israel marches were relatively calm. But some marchers carried signs reading, out with the Jews, or Israelis are child murderers. And under their breath they were saying, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil. German Jews have turned out for pro-Israel rallies too, albeit in small numbers. a rally in Frankfurt drew 2,000, while one in Berlin had 1,500 participants. Quote, when people see our small group, said Sharon Adler, who co-organized the Berlin rally on Sunday, perhaps they will understand that Israel is also a much smaller country than all the Arab countries around it, and that Jews in Germany are also a small minority. Victim card, victim card. In Stockholm, where the Jewish community numbers 5,000, a peace event in support of Israel held Saturday night in a church, Christian church, Christian Zionist, drew 800 people, about half of whom were not even Jewish, according to Lena Posner, the president of the Swedish Jewish community. There were about 100 people outside the church shouting insults against Israel, Posner said. Well, isn't that free speech? I thought that was free speech. The police had to close off the whole area around the church, and we were escorted back to our cars in groups of 15. Oh, Jews are getting fearful. Ah, boy, they've been riding high for a long time, ever since World War II. Tommy likes it. Earlier in the day, 8,000 protesters chanting anti-Jewish slogans gathered for a mostly Muslim demonstration in Stockholm that included the head of the Swedish Socialist Party and the country's former foreign minister. A Liberal Party legislator attended the pro-Israel event. Elsewhere in the country, a burial chapel in the Jewish cemetery in central Malmo was firebombed for the third time since Israel began its operation in Gaza. In Spain, violent incidents have been minimal, although an anti-Israel rally there on Saturday was Europe's biggest such rallies thus far, with crowds estimated from 50,000 to 250,000. Well, that's a pretty wide spread. Representatives of Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero and his ruling Socialist Party were among those who participated. Some participants called for jihad, or holy war, praised Hezbollah, and cursed Israel. The Israeli embassy in Madrid took the rare step of openly chastising the prime minister for fueling anti-Israel anger. Well, you see these politicians, you get 250,000 people in the street and they'll be on your side in 5 seconds. Yeah, give me your support, give me your vote. There was hate speech, definitely, and a few marched to the Israel embassy and threw stones, and the police had to intervene, said Derek Wise, the general manager of Madrid's Jewish community. Our prime minister incited what was going on. Wise said Spanish Friends of Israel was planning a public pro-Israel event for January the 18th. I understand there might be people afraid to come, he said. But we want to show it's not only the Jews, it's normal Spaniards. What's a normal Spaniard? Who also understand that a democratic state like Israel has a right to defend itself. Well, number one, Israel is not a democratic state, and in fact, there's no democratic state in the world, if you understand what a democratic state is supposed to be, and the most hated form of government by our founding fathers. If you don't believe me, look it up. And they have a right to defend itself? No, they have the ability to defend themselves. And if they don't have enough jet planes and nuclear bombs, they won't be able to defend themselves. So anyhow, that's a little... Oh, incidentally, last night I had finished a long day here in the bunker. And I sat down to read a book, and my Skype rang up. I thought I had it fixed so it blocked everybody but the people on my list, but somehow I got to do something about that. I got a call from Israel. Can you believe that? Well, it sounded like students, young people, several in a room, and they were evidently cold calling people all over the United States. It just happened to get me. I don't think they knew who in the hell I was. And they said, what do you think? Who's right and who's wrong and all that? I said, hell, everybody's wrong, especially Washington, D.C., for shipping all these arms over there to you bastards. Well, what would you do if you're Palestinian? Well, if you killed my kids and stuff like that, I'd simply strap on some C4 and walk into the middle of your biggest shopping center in Tel Aviv and pull the plug. Oh, my God, it sounded like a room full of chickens going off. So I didn't get to talk long with the Israeli Jews on Skype last night. Let me know if any of you guys got a call. But I guess they were just cold calling people all over the United States, and on Skype it don't cost any money. Yeah, we are cheap people on there, man. Do you realize that we've got over 200,000 employees now of Homeland Security? 200,000 that are swearing their allegiance to the crime family in Washington just because of Bush's so-called war on terror. 200,000 paid employees of Homeland Security. And that doesn't count the people who volunteer, because there's thousands of people out there who volunteer. Probably your next door neighbor, if he knows how you feel about things, he's probably keeping an eye on you. And I've seen before where the FBI has even gone to your neighbors and they've allowed them to set up cameras in their house. So your worst enemy might be no farther than you can throw a rock. So don't trust necessarily any of your neighbors, because when Homeland Security and the FBI come around to them, they're gonna play it. Well, gee, you know, he may seem to be a good neighbor to you, but he's really a terrorist, and he's planning all kinds of things and probably gonna kill a bunch of non-whites and the whole bit. And the neighbor would, you know, be scared to death. And so, I'll cooperate with you. And anytime I see his car go out of the driveway, I'll make a note of it. And if I see anything funny over there, I'll call you. Believe me, that's the way the public is. That is exactly the way the public is. So figure they've got 200,000 paid employees of which is a joke. Homeland Security is just the opposite. It's Homeland Insecurity. And plus millions of people who will volunteer, especially Christian Zionists and social Marxists. So don't think that you're... Don't worry about your supposed enemies in the Middle East. You don't have any enemies in the Middle East. You only have enemies from the Middle East that come into your country. Your worst enemies are of your own race, your own skin color. The guy you work with, the guy that lives next door that will rat on you in 5 seconds, or if they get you into court of law, he's going to hang you. He's going to hammer you, baby. I'll tell you. Well, I've coined a new word. Yeah, because what happened this morning, I heard him BSing on the TV about how wonderful it's going to be when, what's her name, Michelle Obama gets into the White House. The idea totally almost makes me puke, but they're telling how what kind of dresses she's going to wear to the ball, all this stuff, all these women talking about it, and then saying, well, she won't really need any advice from us because she really knows how to dress, and all this bullshit. Anyhow, it reminded me of I thought of a word for it. This is called Oprahism. You know, from Oprah Winfrey. You know, millions of American white women made that fat little bitch a billionaire. Over a billion. Maybe she's got 2 or 3 billion by now. That was all given to her by white housewives. And probably a lot of those white housewives are married to guys who are active right-wing racists, where they're out there lighting a cross someplace and their wife is home watching Oprah. Oprah is a bitch even among black women, because I was on her show once or twice, and behind the scenes I saw the way she treated her white, she's got all these white girls working for her, because she hates whites. She don't really like the whites that go along with her. She's one of these that she's getting even for all the terrible things the whites had done to her ancestors, and maybe they were slaves. So when that bitch smiles at you, and she's got all these white women around her, she's laughing. She's laughing. Now you're sucking up to me. You're kissing my big flat black ass. And that's the way so many of these blacks that get up in high office and things like that, they're going to just love all these whites that are around them, these sycophants that are going to kiss up to them, suck up to them like that. And that's their form of us getting even with those white bastards. Yeah. So call it Oprahism. That goes right along with negrophilia. Yeah, negrophilia. And that's, of course, what the whole nation pretty much is involved in, necrophilia. Now, I think what we're doing here is propagandizing, yes, among our own people and so forth, but we're sitting back. We don't care how many Palestinians the Jews kill. We don't care how many Jews have Palestinians kill. We only look forward to driving all the non-white, well, Islamics, anyhow, even if they're white Islamics, out of Europe, out of the United States, out of all the white countries of the world, or countries that used to be white. So, and then we're going to sit back, and they're going to have, now they're settling on, I guess, 2 million are supposed to show up at the inauguration. Going to have an inauguration. And Obama, he's playing this Lincoln card, or maybe Truman. He's taking a train down someplace. Either that or he's coming back on a train. He's trying to pull all this bullshit Abraham Lincoln stuff and Harry Truman riding around on a train. He's clever. He's smart. But pick up, I think it's this month's Mad Comic book. Or don't even have to pick it up. Just go to the magazine stand and look at the front page. And I told you the other day, it shows Obama sitting in the Oval Office at his desk with a title on this thing, The First 100 Days. And he's got his desk is a total mess with all these problems, all these papers of problems here, problems there, problems everywhere else. He's got his shirt opened up, his ties untied, his eyes are all buggy, he's sweating, and he's got about 15 cigarettes in his mouth, smoking them all at one time, that he's totally coming apart at the seams. Cut that damn thing out and photocopy it. That's all you have to do, is give that to people. You don't really have to say anything. Just get a copy of that front page and photocopy it and get it out, because it tells it all. I can't wait to see him in there. He's promised, see, you know, diminishing returns. He's promised all these people all this shit, even the whites that follow him and believe that crap. Oh, he is. I was going to take care of everything, just like the niggers did down south during Reconstruction. Well, you know what happened down there? They took over the state houses and they broke the treasuries in a few months. Any money that was in the treasuries of the southern defeated states was exhausted in a short time by these niggers in office. That we got to have Negro equality, and they put them in the state houses and they broke the bank. You watch that film, what was it? The Great White Film. Oh, I had it on the tip of my tongue. But anyhow, they show them sitting in the state legislatures with their shoes off and socks up, just their feet with socks up on the desk, eating fried chicken, the whole bit. Oh, man, it's great. You guys got to have a sense of humor. Everything's going fine. What are you worried about? Now, you can't, we're not collectively strong enough to stop any brutality against our own race. We have a power to protect our own families and like that, because you know what the score is, I know what the score is, and you're not going to screw around if you have a problem. But when they murder the hell out of them, torture these white people, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do about it. You sort of like to say, that's terrible, and I'd like to hang the son of a bitch that did it, but you know, we don't have that power. And we're not going to risk what we've got saving race-mixing whites. They've made their bed. They're into negrophilia and Oprahism, and they're no good to us. And so don't risk anything for them. The only way they're going to learn is to be brutalized. You love the niggers? Okay. Let's go down and walk through Nigger Town in the middle of the night. You like the Mexicans? You like the mestizos? Yeah, we'll go down and walk through the town at night, through the barrio. You'll be unarmed, but I'll have a Mac-10 or 45 at least. We'll see what happens. And I think, in fact, I'll probably take you down there in the middle of the nigger or mestizo neighborhood and just drop you off out of the car with nothing to defend yourself with and say, well, these people are your equals. Just be nice. They won't hurt you. No problem. See you later. Hey, boys and girls, you remember some of the people in the government, I guess some of the Democrats, were trying to get all those emails that were the smoking gun for Cheney and Bush. They would probably should have put them in federal prison, if not hung. Remember how hard they fought, and the White House just wouldn't give them up, and the Attorney General wouldn't do shit about it, the little greasy bastard from Texas. Well, those emails were all bundled up, and they were handled by a company down in Tennessee that were friends of the White House. And they kept badgering them to get those emails and look for those emails. Oh, we can't find those emails. We're not sure. And they stalled and they stalled. Well, the head of the company in Tennessee, and I didn't write his name down, they were closing in on these guys to get these emails. And the head of the company just happened to have a plane crash in the last week or so, I guess it was. And he died. Isn't that interesting how these politicians and people in government that get a little bit, become a problem, seem to always have these plane wrecks? I think he'd have been better off flying on that plane that landed in the Hudson River. Now, there's a pilot, and he's a white guy from the 70s, a fighter pilot. Did you hear that? That took that plane down in there through all those high-rise buildings and set it right down in the Hudson River. Yeah, he's a good white boy, jet pilot from Vietnam. Yeah. But anyhow, isn't that interesting how the guy that knew where all those incriminating emails were at died in an airplane accident? Mm-hmm. Remember Trigba Lee from the UN? He died down in Africa in a plane wreck. Remember Trujillo in Panama? He died in a helicopter wreck. Remember Larry, I'm trying to remember his last name, the congressman who died in a plane wreck going over to Korea, I guess it was, years ago. There's been dozens and dozens of them. And I always think of what Robert Shelton told me one time. He flew a private plane at one time. And he took off one day and almost crashed because somebody had drained the gas out of his tank. Now, he did go against standard rules. A pilot's supposed to check that gasoline on a small plane just before he climbs into the cockpit to take off. And so his being lazy almost got him killed, but they tried to assassinate him, probably an FBI job. back in the 60s. So anyhow, there you go. Well, did you hear? Supreme Court pulled the balls off the Fourth Amendment. Now they've gutted the idea or the law that says that if police do something wrong in their arrest while they're arresting you or going into your home, or if they don't dot the I's and cross the T's, that the case can be thrown out of court. Forget that. That's all gone now. Police don't make mistakes. If they come in and get you, make mistakes, there is no mistake. Fourth Amendment gone. Let's see what's next. First Amendment's hanging by a thread, especially for us. So did you hear much talk about that on the radio or the TV? No, I didn't. Well, anyhow, that's the story. Goodbye, Fourth Amendment. Now, here's a funny one from the UK. Hey, you UK boys. There was a guy ran into a convenience store with a machete over there, probably some kind of a raghead. And there was a silent alarm. And two undercover cops came running from different directions. And they arrested each other. And the guy with the machete got away. Two undercover cops tried to arrest each other. Hey, boys in the UK, that's a funny one. Well, they got Negro Eric Holder, one of Obama's old buddies, up for a hearing to try to make him the attorney general. Yeah, we had a Mexican last time. We've got a... going to have a nigger this time. Washington's filling up with niggers faster than the general population, the way it looks. I guess they want to make the executive and legislative branches of government look like the same population makeup as Washington, D.C., almost all black. Well, anyhow, Eric Holder, remember him? He was involved with the FBI and so forth. Well, remember Clinton? Remember Mark Rich, the big fraud scandal guy who is Jewish and ripped off tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, and then he fled to Europe, and the FBI went over and got him, brought him back, and guess what? They pardoned him. Clinton pardoned him, and Eric Holder was in on that deal. But, of course, he didn't know anything about it. He was testifying today. And guess who was testifying for him? That little bastard, Louis Free, who used to be the Jewish head of the famous but incompetent FBI. Tell him what a wonderful guy this Negro man was. What a bunch of sycophant sons of bitches in Washington. God, I wouldn't even flinch if that plane had gone right into the White House. That's my opinion. If people don't like it, fuck them. Yeah. Well, let's look at some of the Lives of the Rich and Famous here by Sean Amos in Get Back. I think he's black, isn't he? There are certain professions you pursue for the perks in politics, rock music, and blogging come to mind most immediately. All three come with amazingly extravagant lifestyles for the most successful and powerful. I definitely got into the blogging for lifestyle. As I write this, I'm having my feet rubbed in $1,000 Brazilian nut butter by two of my foot handlers. After I'm done, I will take a bath in my 24-karat gold tub with water imported from Switzerland. They have the softest water. As we hear the news of 2 million jobs lost, a recession that could last years, and the bankruptcies of Fortune 500 companies, it's a good time as any to look at the lifestyles of the musical and the famous. These are 10 musicians who have had the most extravagant, decadent lifestyles and habits of anyone. A life where the M&Ms are never brown, the crystal always flows, and there is always a hotel room ready to demolish. Let the good times roll again. Well, I guess there's a whole bunch of these guys. I think they're mostly niggers. Yeah. People like Michael Jackson, you know. Of course, there's plenty of white guys that did it too, you know, even Elvis Presley. Yeah. And Van Halen, all these guys, you know. Living like, well, they're crazy. I mean, and you know these guys, what they'll do? They'll cry and say, we got to help the poor. We got to help the poor. Oh, I can't handle any more of that. I can't find it right now, but I had an article here about some Negro in New Jersey who'd lived in the town for many years, became the mayor. But he immediately started getting all kinds of hate calls and hate notes and hate letters, and now he's quit being mayor. He resigned as mayor. Couldn't take it anymore. Scared the holy bejesus out of him. Yeah, so somebody's doing some good work out there, I guess. How about that? He said, I can't take any more of this shit, man. I'm going back to the hood. Boy, L.A. is a wonderful place, isn't it? Los Angeles, what a place to be. The gang capital of the world is taking a new tack against them. Cash damages. The city of Los Angeles, plagued by 23,000 violent gang crimes since 2004, including 784 murders and 12,000 felony assaults. They don't put on here how many rapes. Announced Tuesday that it had won its first civil judgment for $5 million against a criminal gang that had dominated the heroin trade downtown for decades. Now, compare this to them getting a $10 million civil judgment award against me. Now, this is a gang that's been involved in murders, a heroin trade, everything. They only got a $5 million judgment. And if they're still handling heroin, hell, they could pay that off in a weekend. The verdict could bode well for another first-of-its-kind lawsuit the city filed last month that goes after all the assets of gang leaders, not just those associated with criminal activity. Both suits seek to plow the money back into improving the neighborhoods affected by the gangs through a fund. Well, these gang leaders, they got to be smart enough not to own anything on paper. And without owning anything on paper, what the hell does the city think they're going to get? You know? That's crazy, man. That's crazy. Says here, by giving prosecutors more tools to fight gang activity at the local level, we are protecting our communities at the same time that we're able to strengthen our statewide anti-gang effects, said Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in a statement released with the announcement of the $5 million verdict against the 5th and Hill gang in L.A. That doesn't mean shit. That having a judgment against a bunch of clowns like that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything, except the politicians will say, now vote for me because I got a judgment against these niggers or these Mexicans. The civil suits were filed under different amendments to state laws, one passed in 2007 and one in 2008, designed to strengthen authorities' ability to control gangs. No, you need a law about controlling niggers and Mexicans. That's what you need. You say gang, well, who's in that damn gang? You spent $1 billion in L.A. County last year on illegal aliens. Jeez. The 2000 amendment allows law enforcement to seize assets associated with criminal conduct. Well, that ought to apply to the damn politicians. I mean, they're into all kinds of criminal conduct, right up to the governor. But the 2008 law goes even further. It allows prosecutors to collect damages from gang members' personal assets, too. How are you going to prove they're their assets? I mean, you can see the guy, the clothes he's wearing. Yeah, you can maybe take that, or he may even claim those clothes are rented. And a car's rented. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't have anything. What are they going to collect off these guys? Somebody's out of their mind. Unless they find a barrel of cash buried in their backyard or something. And then there'd be a big argument over that in court. And attorneys would get all the money anyhow. The December suit against the 18th Street gang is the first to make use of the 2008 amendment. Now, this sounds really cool to the average stupid white Republican. Oh boy, they're doing a job. They're going after those gangs. We're sending a message to gang leaders across the city, said City Attorney Rocky Delgadillo. Better investigate Rocky Delgadillo first. At press conference last month, if you break the law, we will not only find you, arrest you, and put you behind bars, we will also take away your money, your property, your homes, and your cars. Every penny we strip away will be returned to the neighborhoods. Now, a year from now, I want you to follow this story and see how much of this money got back to the neighborhoods. First of all, even if they got a bunch of money, people in government are going to steal most of it. And by the time it filters down through all these fake, fraudulent neighborhood committees and shit in the ghetto, they won't even have enough money left to fix a sidewalk. The tactic of trying to cripple organizations by taking away their assets has been commonly used against the mafia. They use it against me. But it didn't stop me at all. It didn't stop me at all. I never quit doing what I did. Never quit publishing a newspaper. I went right on. More recently, it has been used against white supremacist organizations. Here we go. In 2000, the Southern Poverty Law Center won a $6.3 million verdict against Aryan Nations that forced the organization to give up its 20-acre compound in Idaho. Well, if Butler was still alive, if Richard Butler was still alive, there'd still be an Aryan Nations. The only reason there's no Aryan Nations is because he held it together, and it was operating after they took the compound. The center won its most recent case last November, getting $2.5 million from the Imperial Clans of America on behalf of a teenager assaulted by Klan members in a rural Kentucky fair. They didn't get a dime. They haven't got a dime. What's his name down there in Kentucky? Every guy, he's judgment proof. You see, this is all bullshit. It's to make people, taxpayers, think there's something going on here. Money to repair the neighborhoods. The city attorney's office says it's moving against the 18th Street gang on behalf of residents who can't file suit themselves because they can't afford the expense and they fear retaliation. Well, that's like guerrilla warfare. If the guerrillas control the streets of an area or the roads of an area or property in an area, you better be good or they'll take care of you. Gangs control certain neighborhoods by exacting so-called street taxes on home and business owners as well as street vendors. Well, I would say they probably do more good getting street taxes for the local people than the politicians do. That's sort of an extreme statement, but government robs people a lot more than these gangs. The suit seeks compensation for property damage, emotional distress, personal injury, and intangibles such as a residence not being able to use public parks because of gang activity. Well, there's enough people in these areas. If they had any balls, they'd all get together and go down and clean them out. If the gang's hanging out in a park, you get 100 people together with baseball bats, you go down and beat the shit out of them, run them out, and keep them out. The reason gangs like that are effective is because the public are cowardly and cowards. And so in the natural world, if you're weak and cowardly, you die. So really, it's evolution, and, you know, the predator is doing his thing, and if you don't rise up and stop him, then who's the smart one? Not you. It names nine leaders of the 18th Street Gang, which has operated for years in the Pico, Union, and Westlake areas, and I'll tell you, they're going to be operating long after this goes by. They may change their name. One of the leaders, Ruben Night Owl Castro, is serving multiple life terms in a federal maximum security prison, but still allegedly controls two gang subgroups in the Shadow Park Locos and the Hoover Locos. So there he is. He's in a prison controlling the whole deal. The damages collected in the suit will be placed in a fund. Uh-oh. Whenever the government gets a fund going, it's going to get raided for something. Well, how come we didn't get no of that money down here in the barrio to fix the streets? I don't know what happened to it. We'll have to investigate that. Oh, brother. The fund will be administered by the city council, he says, and will most likely go towards security cameras, graffiti removal, and the beautification of parks. You wait and see how that works out. Half of the guys on the city council are felons. They should be investigated. And believe me, a lot of that money is going to stick to their pockets. Gang members are not necessarily the best at saving their money, but they do buy stuff and invest in property and make cash down payments. Well, if they are, they're stupid. They should be judgment-proof. Yeah, they shouldn't own anything. So, well, that's enough of that shit. I'm tired of wallowing around down there in L.A. Well, one of our good buddies over in the UK said, I went away to Poland last weekend. There are plenty of good whites over there. Now I'm 5 hours behind on your shows, yet you still keep sending more. I really can't keep up with them, man. He's laughing. Take care. Yeah, man. You guys say you want racism? We give you racism, man. People say, some of these guys out there say, I can only put one show a week on the internet. We're putting out one, maybe two, you know, every day. So, if you can't handle it, well, stay up at night and listen. Stay up at night and listen, baby. You need the stuff. Well, you want to know where a lot of your money goes in these gambling casinos and all these poor white workers run to all these gambling casinos and empty their pockets right into the pockets of the Jews. Hammond, Indiana, for the past 5 years, Horseshoe Casino's regional president and general manager, Rick Mamzer, which Mumzer in Hebrew means bastard, a Jew, and his wife, Aria, a Jewess, have supported the work of the Shini Zedek Medical Center in Jerusalem. Medical Center representatives honored the Mamzers on Saturday during a gala celebration at the casino's Stars of David Lounge. The all-white town of St. John Ashkenazi, Khazar residents, received the Raoul Wallenberg Humanitarian Award, presented by the Midwest Region of the American Committee for Shini Zedek Medical Center. The Mamzers also will be feted at a fundraising dinner for the medical center March 19th at the Horseshoe Casino. Organized for more than a century ago, Shini Zedek, which translates to Gates of Self-Righteousness, cares for Jerusalem's diverse population, but especially the Jews. Well, anyhow, I'm not going to go on with this. Just tell your friends when they go up there and lose all their goddamn money at these casinos, most of them are run by Jews, and the profits go to the Jews, and the Jews use that against you. And you're better off just to have a private card game among your friends and gamble that way. But the medical center receives no financial support from the Israeli government. Well, it doesn't have to, as long as stupid white Christian Zionists and gamblers support it. It relies on donations from around the world in order to fund and carry out research, upgrade equipment, and maintain and expand its facilities, said Allison Slovan-Pure, director of the committee's Midwest Regional Branch. 66% of the contributions to the Sheeny Zedek Medical Center comes from the Christian Zionists in the United States of North America. The well-known boyish-looking matinee idol of the 50s, none other than Pat Boone, has been the most generous contributor to the Jewish Medical Center in 2007. Mr. Boone has stated that when our Lord comes back, one of the first places he will visit will be the Sheeny Zedek Medical Center. I remember Pat Boone back when he was big in the rock and roll and making movies. I went to a anti-communist movie once in Santa Monica, California, and I and my wife sat down, and all of a sudden I turned around, and there was Pat Boone right behind us. He'd been a Christian Zionist from way back, and a whole lot of these, well, almost all these Christian people in the movies and all that kind of stuff, they're all Christian Zionists. And of course, all these big shots in these big churches are extreme Christian Zionists that I would like to see. I'd like to see them put about 5 Jews on the back of each one of these Christian Zionist leaders and push them out of the country, or put them in an airplane, fly them over there to Israel, and dump them out at about 1,000 feet. Get rid of the fuckers. Well, I guess that's about it for now. I might play a little music before I go, but I don't know. I just decided I wanted to talk some more, so I made another show. And I hope you can keep up with old Tommy. I'm 70 years old and ready to go, man. Okay, we'll be back with you on Saturday. We've got a couple of guests on Saturday, I guess. So we'll see you then. And it's 14:05. And later, alligator.
Take another look.
the name shame, but the story's the same. We're just wanting your power game. We're the monster when you need a push. When nobody's fool, take another look.
Gonna die here. These are cops.
They're cops. Who gives a shit?
Hey, Lee, something I never told you about me. I hate fucking cops.
Belong.